When's the next meeting?
9:30.
They could go for breakfast, then come back.
You know, what's going on? How are you handling this? Up until this week, things seemed to be going very well for the manufacturers. Many of them, you know, from a business standpoint, are doing extremely well. Some of it's because they've burnt through inventory. Some of it is because there's a, you know, a demand in the market. You know, many items, as we all know, you go out and try to buy something and, you know, we need a dryer. We're being told we're not going to dryer in our house until the end of July. So my wife is hanging things all over the house as we're trying to wait for a new dryer to come. So I think there's pent up demand in the market. If that's sustainable, you know, that's yet to be seen. I said, you know, this all happened, you know, everything was going well until a week ago. And that's when, you know, the governor announced the travel restrictions. And there is a lot of angst among the manufacturers over the travel restrictions. Even with the essential work, you know, the essential worker allowances, there's still, you know, a lot of concern about how it's going to be regulated, how it's going to be implemented, you know, how quickly the list will change. You know, I had a business from the Hornell area reach out to me, you know, just yesterday and said, you know, he's got, you know, business ventures in Arizona. And, you know, he's trying to figure out, he's supposed to go out there for a week next week to deal with his businesses, you know, in Arizona and then come back to Hornell. And he says, you know, we have 30 families in Hornell that depend on us and depend on me. And am I supposed to basically quarantine for 14 days? Now, the essential worker, you know, the essential worker exemptions will allow him to continue to operate. But there is really fear in the manufacturing market that these restrictions are going to get tighter, and that's going to definitely have an impact on how many of our businesses operate. And that's large and small manufacturing businesses. I also know that there's a lot of, you know, fear in the market regarding traveling and tourists and, you know, how that's going to impact our tourism markets. And we're beginning to hear, you know, some of those concerns right now. The expectation is that after the holiday, we're going to start reaching out, you know, more formally to phase two businesses and start to gather some information from them. Not that we haven't been communicating, you know, regularly with many of our businesses, but we want to do it in a little bit more formal manner just to see how things are going with phase two businesses. And then a couple of weeks after that, we're going to be doing phase three and then phase four. We just want to give them time to begin to understand what their new world looks like. As I said, many businesses are doing extremely well. You talk to Tony Russo at Southern Tier Provisions, and you know he says the pizzerias are doing so well that he can't keep up with the demand at many times. So keep ordering pizzas for dinner. I greatly appreciate it because it's impacting a lot of our businesses. Upstate Niagara says they're doing well. So again, you know, the economy is starting to churn. The biggest concern with the manufacturers right now is workforce. You know, It will be very interesting to see what happens when the CARES Act additional $600 a week benefit expires at the end of July. Right now, businesses are having a hard time getting employees to want to come back because they're fearful that they're going to lose that additional $600, which, you know, we think is very short-sighted because, you know, they're depending on something that is not a permanent, you know, a permanent income. And at the end of that $600, there's no guarantee that they're going to get called back. This is resulting in, you know, what we're hearing is a shortage of essential skills and talents. So now all of a sudden, businesses are starting to steal employees from, you know, from other employers who have those skills available to them by offering them more money. So there's a shift in talent that's going on right now. It's still a workforce issue, but a much different issue than, you know, what we faced in the past when we had, you know, 4 to 5% unemployment. And we were talking about, you know, those individuals who were not participating in the workforce that were the most hard to serve. Now we're talking about a different level of non-participation in the workforce. The other, you know, struggles that businesses are having with talent, are things, you know, related to just what we're doing here, understanding technology, remote working, doing more with less. You're going to see a lot of that. I think we've all figured out as employers that, you know, we may not need that third person. You know, we found that we can do more without that person or do just as much without that person. So I think as we get through this, we're going to see a much different dynamic around workforce development. But right now, that continues to be a top priority for businesses as they begin to ramp up. So, you know, those are a few of the things we're hearing. We've started engaging in conversations with Susan Payne at Three Rivers Development, you know, in her new role, Southern Tier Central Regional Planning, you know, our partners in Hornell about what a recovery strategy looks like, a long-term recovery strategy. We've been busy dealing with the day-to-day things, and, you know, now we've got to start thinking about, okay, what does recovery really look like 6, 12, 18, 24 months from now? Some of the topics that have been, you know, part of the discussion have been around workforce long-term. They've been around broadband. You know, I don't think what we're doing right now with me being remote is going to go away anytime soon. And as we talk about our ability as a region to, you know, attract talent for our businesses, but as importantly, attract talent from other areas who may be working remotely, there's a very, you know, large benefit that we can derive from that. You know, if we have individuals, you know, that are going to be able to continue to work remotely long-term from a large urban area, and they want to live here, and they can access the broadband requirements that are necessary to do so, you know, we could suddenly become, you know, a location for talent that's looking at being able to work remotely because they can, you know, find an inexpensive home. It's a nice place to live. And, oh, by the way, we have great broadband accessibility. And with the investment that Southern Tier Central and the Southern Tier Network have made into the dark fiber backbone, that's critical in being able to do that. So, again, you know, those are some of the discussions that are occurring right now as we speak. And we hope to be able to advance those initiatives as the weeks and months go forward. So that's just a little bit of a taste of some of the things that are going on. I will tell you, I'm very concerned about the state budget and our ability to attract new business and to facilitate business growth, utilizing the channels that we've been used to utilizing through the CFA and Empire State Development. Basically what we're being told is there's no money. If you want tax credits or a loan, we'll talk about it, but don't come to us looking for a grant. So we're going to have to get creative as we start talking about business expansion and development, because right now the state of New York has very little money to put towards that. And I don't think that's, you know, that's any different than many other states that we typically compete with, and how the state handles that will be very interesting going forward. But, you know, I don't foresee a CFA this year, the consolidated funding application round. We've been told that any upstate revitalization initiative monies that were allocated that had not been spent, are probably gone away. We're also hearing that the DRI, the Downtown Revitalization Initiative, which Hornell won last year, the $10 million allocation, that there will likely not be any future rounds in the near term of DRI funding. So I think this year is going to be a very tight year, and likely next year when it comes to economic development resources. So we're just going to have to get creative. We're going to have to look at other ways to accomplish the things that we want to accomplish. And I'm confident that with the team we have together, both at the IDA and the county and our other partners, we'll be able to do so. A few good things that are still going on. You know, renewable energy hasn't missed a beat. You know, we just closed on two solar projects, one in Dansville and one in Bath. We've approved a third. We have given final approvals for two of the three wind projects that are on the docket. They've gotten through the Article 10 process and now are looking to start construction later on in the year, closer to fall when the leaves start coming off, because you know, they have to wait until a lot of the leaves drop from the trees before they can start doing some of the clearing that they need to do. The Dana Lyons School, they actually received word from the state that their funding cycle, which is historic preservation tax credits and other income eligibility credits, is going to be expedited. So instead of an October round, they're looking at a September round. So they've decided that they want to, you know, basically, you know, put their foot to the floor and get this project ready to go. So they've been working diligently on the design and getting their application packet put together for that building. Keep your fingers crossed on Phillips. That's all I'm going to say. Things are looking good there. And, you know, as I said, you know, businesses around, at least manufacturing businesses around, you know, the county are doing okay. Corral Brands expects to start up manufacturing again next week. That was a planned phase in. They wanted to be very careful about how they did it because they didn't want to add additional stress to their furnaces if they had to shut down again. So they've been monitoring, you know, the health situation. And I talked to the new manager of manufacturing who is in Charleroi just this week. And again, he was concerned over the travel restrictions, and their plan is to start manufacturing process up and refire those furnaces, or at least get the furnaces flowing again next week. So that's good. So they should be back up to full capacity by the end of next week. Other than that, you know, we're going to continue to monitor things, and we're going to continue to communicate the best we can to our business community and work with them to understand, you know, the impacts of the decisions that are being made regarding the pandemic. And, you know, hopefully as we move forward, we'll start to see some additional growth come out of this. I think the job numbers that came out last week, it was, if any of you looked at them or get them, it was interesting because they just did not make any sense to me when I looked at the employment numbers that come out one week and then the unemployment numbers that come out the next week. It showed that we had a substantial loss in our employment, yet the unemployment number went down. And I kept questioning it. And I was talking to Christian Harris at Department of Labor, and I said, something just doesn't add up. And he reached out to Albany. Well, apparently when Albany sent the letters out, they forgot to change the April employment numbers to reflect the May employment numbers. So while we were showing we lost 1,700 jobs, it showed the unemployment number showed that we gained 1,700 jobs. Well, when in fact we had gained the 1,700 jobs back, they just didn't update the spreadsheet before they sent it out to the public. So the good news is that it looks like employment numbers are starting to trend in the right direction. We're still, you know, at a very high unemployment rate, but we're lower than what the state average is. And we expect that as the additional phases come online and those numbers are reflected, that we'll get to a closer to what we would consider normal. But I don't think, I think it's going to be a long time before we get back down to that 5% level. You know, I'm hoping we get into single digits next month, and then we can continue to chip away at it as we work with our business going forward. With that, Jack, I don't know if you have anything else you want to add, or, you know, happy to answer any questions that the group has right now.
Nothing from me.
Jack, shaking his head, he has nothing to add. Questions? Yes, John, Walter?
Revolving loan fund, how is that going?
John, I couldn't hear you on our system.
Jamie, the question from John Walter was, how's the revolving loan fund progressing?
The revolving loan fund is progressing nicely. You know, Chris and I sit on that loan committee, as does Jill from my office. Right now, we have lent. We've lent just over $200,000, lent and closed. We've disbursed money on just over $200,000. I don't have the exact numbers. We can get that for you. I have to tell you, I thought we would have lent more than what we have. Having said that, we had a long discussion last week with REDEC, and Chris was part of that. And, you know, Chris can jump in if he likes. I think, you know, we want to continue to maintain that program because, you know, with what's going on right now, access to capital, you know, as we get through the summer months, may become even more critical in the fall, especially, you know, as things occur, like, you know, the street closure in Corning, you know, we get back to normal there. And as the tourist season, you know, ramps down, what tourist season we do end up having, And then, you know, as we move to fall, and if the pandemic worsens, I do think that access to capital is going to continue to be critical. So, you know, we want to make sure that we maintain those resources through October to see what the demand is, you know, as we move into the fall. And then we're going to have a discussion about, you know, how we advance that program going forward. So I'd hope that we would have had more money out. I was a little surprised. The money that we have gotten out has been very critical, and it's been an extremely diverse, you know, group of clients, from, you know, small garages, small community garages, to dental offices, to hotels, to local bars and eateries. So it has been impactful and helped with a lot of our businesses. But quite honestly, John, I'd hope that we would have had more money on the street by now. But I think we were a little late to the game by the time we got it finally approved.
So those loans that have gone out, when does the repayment start on them?
The repayment will start, well, they'll be all timed differently because they do have a 6-month moratorium on payments. So, you know, they're all the early ones that we got out in March will start repayment, you know, in September, October timeframe. The ones that we just closed on now likely won't start until December or January, depending on when the funds actually went out the door.
Jamie, Aaron Mullen here. What about the Tioga Container Project? Is that affected by any of the funding loss?
No, I hesitated on that because we have not heard anything from the state that says that funding is going to go away for projects that have already received some level of allocation. What we've heard is that, you know, the things have slowed down. So, for example, we were on a call last week with Upstate Niagara and Empire State Development, and, you know, they were told not to expect their final paperwork until at least August because of the slowdown. Now, a lot of that just simply has to do with the fact that staff is all working remotely and there's a backlog. What has been impacted is that the size and scope of the project increased, and the Tioga Container was hopeful that they could go back and try to leverage, you know, some additional resources from the state. We've made that request. I don't think it's going to happen at the level that they expect it to. And I think, you know, if there is an increase, it's likely going to be, you know, tax credits instead of cash. But we haven't heard back from the state. So that's all just speculation at this point, Aaron. But right now, you know, Tioga Container is moving forward full speed. They actually there's a village planning board meeting tonight where they're going to be considering the full application from Tioga Container. Then the village is going to take a month to review that materials. They've hired their own engineer to do so. And then hopefully, you know, they can issue final site plan approval in August, and Tioga can start construction shortly thereafter. There is some opposition, you know, that has, as expected, you know, raised concerns. There is going to be a second village public hearing, and then we're going to have our public hearing in July, and we expect to hear many of those same concerns and have those same people come out. Primarily, the concern is around traffic and noise, and that's not unexpected and unanticipated. So, you know, we've made sure that the traffic study addresses all of that. Right now, the recommendations of the traffic study are a reduction of speed, some different phasing of the lighting. The traffic study does show, though, that the current systems can accommodate it with the increased traffic, which really isn't much different than what the original Tioga Container Project was proposed at. Tioga is working with the village on, you know, the recommended measures to mitigate, and the hope is that, you know, we'll get those in place as the project comes online once the final approval is given in August. You know, we're sensitive to the concerns, and so is Tioga. The reality, though, with that site is it's a very limited site as to what you can do with it. You know, the restrictions that were put in place by Dresser, and they are Dresser restrictions, not DEC restrictions, limited what you can and cannot do on that site. So it is an industrial site. It will always remain an industrial site, and it's an industrial site right at the intersection of two major interstates. So the interest that you're going to see there is always and always has been and likely will be, you know, interest that has some level of truck traffic, and the village has to determine, you know, how much they're willing to accept to get that site redeveloped.
How many jobs are they looking at there?
70 jobs total. Total impact on truck traffic is going to be what they consider 100 trips, which is 50 in and 50 out over a 16-hour day. There's only going to be two shifts, not three shifts. It's going to be 6 days a week, not 7 days a week. So you're talking three trucks an hour is what the anticipated trip traffic is. That's three in and three out. You know, so it's not a heavy truck, you know, user for a 600,000 square foot facility. I mean, that is a significant amount of trucks. We don't want to, you know, discount that. But for a 600,000 square foot facility, that's really a small amount of traffic that's going to go in and out. And it's a $32 million investment right now is what's being proposed.
Jamie, I've heard some concerns about Dunlop Wind. Do you know anything about that there?
The question was Gunlock, Robin?
Yes.
I have not heard from them in about a week and a half or 2 weeks. That is a company that I have been in constant communication with all through this. And I will say the one good thing that I can say that has come out of the pandemic for us as an organization has been the fact that we now have a group of contacts that we've never had before, meaning that we always had a good relationship with the plant manager that was there at any given time. We made sure we fostered that relationship. We still do have that relationship. But, you know, suddenly now, you know, the discussion is with the plant manager, the director of corporate real estate, the head of manufacturing at the HNI level. So, you know, our communications have been much broader than just with the local plant manager. And, you know, Gunlock, you know, remains committed to this location, or I should say HNI remains committed to this location. And, you know, they are going to continue to operate there. They have ramped up, you know, manufacturing operations again. I can't tell you what their job numbers are at right now, Robin, but, you know, I feel comfortable that, you know, as we move through this and we come out of this, you know, Gunlock is going to continue to remain a going concern in the Wayland market. And, you know, as we've experienced in the past, you know, their employment will ebb and flow based on the market.
Good to hear. Any other questions for Jamie?
In regards to phase four and the decision not to reopen halls and movie theaters and that, is there any word on when the decision will be to move forward with opening those?
I can answer that, Jamie.
Thank you.
Short answer is no. We keep every day, we keep pressing and saying, if we set a date, that's our message.
Okay.
Set a date.
I know I talked to you before about that. I didn't know if you had any word or anything.
I brought up specifically gyms again yesterday. I've asked about the theaters, bowling alleys, and gyms, which are our main issues in our county because we don't have them all. And what we were told specifically on the gyms and fitness centers is they're working with, I think it's primarily the Y, because they're the biggest association, that the governor's office is working with them on developing the guidance to have them reopen. We've been talking to the Y in your area a lot, almost daily. It doesn't look like they have to do that new filtration system that they're talking about making the malls do. So short answer is no. We keep pushing, and they know they're getting a lot of heat, especially on the fitness centers.
Mm-hmm.
Malls are really pushing too, but it's the fitness centers that seem to be the biggest one right now. So as soon as I hear something, I'll let you know.
All right.
Frustrating.
Yeah.
And one thing I'd just like to add, you know, as we talk about malls and retail and, you know, movie theaters, when I talk to other, you know, folks in our industry, economic development, across the nation, and we've participated on a lot of webinars and sessions through the International Economic Development Council, which is an organization that we are involved with. Retail is going to look much different when we come out of this. It already is. I mean, you're starting to see a lot of the nationals go away, and because primarily they've been very, heavy on the debt side. Everyone is becoming more accustomed to online shopping, curbside delivery. You know, the things that we've all never thought we'd become accustomed to, we are in a large way. So how that impacts Main Street businesses and downtown businesses is something that's yet to be seen, but it is part of that recovery plan discussion that we've been having. And, you know, it's something that I think will ultimately benefit our downtowns as we move back away from large big box retail. And as we, you know, don't want to order a pair of shoes offline because we're afraid they aren't going to fit, or, you know, we want something that's very specific or a service that you just can't get through an Amazon or something like that. So I do think that a year from now, the discussion around recovery and what retail, you know, looks like, you know, I even if they open up movie theaters, I don't know if people are going to come back, and I don't know if the movie production companies are going to, you know, do big movie theater pushes, or they're going to do direct to pay-per-view like they have over the course of the past few months. So I still think on that side, there's going to be more fallout over the next several months. And I think it's too early to predict what that fallout's going to look like, but I do think things are going to look much differently than they looked before we went into this.
Okay, any further discussion, questions?
I have stuff, but not necessarily for Jamie. Okay. So, and Jamie could chime in on some of this. So is Mike, because Mike was at the meeting. But at the Conference of Visitors Bureau board meeting yesterday, CMOG, according to Regina, says it's opening today. The Welcome Center is closed, but the shuttle will be running. And I mentioned earlier, they normally have over 1,000 people the Wednesday before the 4th of July. But now, because of reservations needed, they've got about 150 people. So it'll go slow, but they did a soft opening, I guess, and things seem to be okay.
Hey, not to interrupt, I went to that to meet Bill, because I've been working closely with him, Bill Gilbert, their operations manager. They have it set up great.
Yeah.
They really have good protocols, good procedures. The app theater is going to look a little different. They're going to limit that to 50 for now, and then keep going, step it up. But yeah, they look like they got the shot together. So.
They made it, and I think, like, you'll remember, she talked about a lot of plexiglass being used.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'm like, it's the Corning Museum of Glass. They're using plexiglass and not real glass. I didn't say anything, but I thought it was, just thought that was kind of funny.
They don't make sheet glass anymore.
Apparently not.
Yeah, my shot blow.
But the on a more serious note, the agency itself has not received yet the matching funds from the state. They don't know if they're going to get it or when they're going to get it. That's about $88,000. And they've been cutting expenses as much as possible to hopefully end up okay at the end of the year. One of the things they were hoping for was to purchase a vehicle, that a mobile visitor center, if you will. But since there aren't any events, they decided that obviously they don't need the vehicle. So they'll put it off. They'll put it off till next year, hopefully. We have a new person on the board, or in the staff, Craig Hill, who is their communication person. And he created a new video called Together Again. So if you want to go out and look at it, it's nice to welcome tourists back into the area. There's a new, and it sounded pretty positive with the people who are on there. We have a winery representative who said wineries are no longer going to be requiring reservations because it was too confusing. So starting, I think, right now, you can just go. They'll just have to do social distancing themselves. One of the hotels commented that they have a lot of people call to reserve space, reserve rooms because their big vacations have been canceled. So instead of going to Florida and some of these other states, they're going to stay in the district, so which is good. We had Best Western and Hammett Sports opening back up on Thursday. If you notice, and you're going by for months now, that they've been completely closed.
Hilda, I'd like to add, you know, one comment onto that when you start talking about, you know, individuals looking at traveling closer. I sit on the board of directors for Finger Lakes Wine Country, and most of you know they just went through a major rebranding, and we're getting ready to unveil that publicly back when the pandemic hit, and they have unveiled that, but in a much more soft manner. I think the important thing to know is that, you know, they have a fairly significant advertising and marketing budget that they've traditionally done on a much more regional basis in the Northeast. So in large metro markets like Boston, DC, New York City, and others, the decision has been made at the board level to basically bring all of that marketing budget within a 2-hour drive radius. So all of the marketing that is occurring through Finger Lakes Wine Country is being done in markets within a 2-hour drive, because the sense is and the feeling is, and what you're just saying about the hotels is that, you know, individuals are going to stay closer to home this year. So we want to make sure that we promote that we are a safe region, and that we, you know, welcome those visitors to come. And that's what their ad campaign is all about. And it's being done in a much closer proximity than what it's been done before. So I think that was a good decision. And from what you're saying with the hotels, it's starting to bear out.
Yep. And he also used as an example, there's a new business called Cuca Kayaks, if I remember right. And this person can't get enough paddleboards or kayaks. It's so busy that she is going gangbusters. And so that's another positive thing about the area. One of the things that they considered a problem for them is the space. They have that small, I don't know if any of you have been in their office, but it's a little tiny area on the second floor of the Barron's Deven or the Corning. They rent it from the Corning and Enterprises Group. But with remote work, when they work remote, it's going to save some of the problems, hopefully. But they just need to gear up for long-term remote work, because right now they're not set up for it as well. So that's one of the things they'll probably be investing in. Mike, did I miss anything you mentioned about property on the lake? Do you want to mention that?
Oh, just the sales on the lake are pretty active this year. The inventory's low, but still some good buyers out there, and they're moving quickly, the ones that come on the market. The other is the rental properties. The rental properties naturally are very active this year. People scrambling to try to find something. They usually have to be a year ahead of time to get a rental. So we're getting a lot of calls from people looking last minute. And the rental costs are going up. You know, people are jacking their rents up because they know the demand is there. Again, what we miss out on is that room tax for most of the rental properties on the lake. So otherwise, no, good job, Hilda. You hit it.
Yeah, I was actually in a shoot this past weekend with Doug
Village of Penn Yan, that if the rentals are within the village, they have to get a portion of the proceeds.
Yep.
So their treasurer's department actually manages, I mean, everyone in Gates County has to register their property.
Because they passed a local law 10 years ago or so.
Yeah, and he said that was, there was a hell of a lot of pushback then, but he said now it's just part of the rental fee. He said that they manage that pretty strictly.
Well, VRBO owns HomeAway and
right. Everything
else. So if you've got VRBO, you've got everything.
Yeah, if you had Airbnb, VRBO, you'd get HomeAway as well. So
yeah. You'd
have the secondary market covered.
So anything else pop in your head, Sammy, or are you done?
I am done, unless there are any other questions.
Okay. Being no further business, and then I have a motion for adjournment.
Motion.
Second. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay, we're adjourned. Thank you, Jamie.
Yep. Thank you.
So did you tell your project yet?
No.
Because you see much more renter speed now than you were when you were a long-time property.
No, we didn't use VRBO. We didn't use VRBO. And they take care of everything. But all they have to do is we pass the law.